What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Fast Friday Podcast. I'm Craig Smoke, midday host of UNR on ESPN Central Texas, weekdays 12 to 3, also Sikkim365.com team reporter. And I am joined, as always, by Grayson Grundhafer, recruiting reporter, team reporter for Sikkim365.com, as well as director of broadcasting, of course. And Grayson, how are we doing this week?
Doing good. Nice to have a few days off since Baylor played on Thursday. So a little bit of a lax period, just kind of looking at recruiting pretty much. And that West Virginia game did not quite go as I think most Baylor fans had hoped. And, you know, watching it was definitely really painful. And I would say it was one of, since I came to Baylor in 2012, it was probably the worst beating I have really ever seen since following Baylor sports.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was an awful watch. It was thankfully on a Thursday night, though, as I put out a tweet that night saying, well, hey, at least, I mean, the gist of it was, hey, at least everybody's got a free weekend and a free Saturday, because imagine having to go through the whole process of going to the game and the pregame and all that, which is fun, but then sitting at McLean Stadium and watching something like that and then having to drive back home wherever you live, you know, at least you had the free Saturday to just kind of do whatever, which was a nice little break. But yeah, it was at the cost of an embarrassing performance on national TV. And, you know, I told you before we started, I mean, it's been over a week now since that game, and Baylor's moved on to Oklahoma State. We're going to talk about Oklahoma State. We're going to get into a few recruiting notes, update you on what's going on, expound upon some of the things that are being talked about on the message board. But we'll also get into, you know, this weekend's Big 12 schedule and all of that. But I don't really want to spend a whole lot of time on West Virginia, because I feel like everything that could be said about it has been said at this point, and really would just be kind of beating a dead horse. But we'll at least just offer some thoughts. It was awful. I mean, they came out of the gates, somewhat focused, it looked like, and the defense stepped up and made a couple of plays, you know, a blocked field goal, kept them in it, kept it close, and then in the second quarter it all just fell apart. And I think we got an idea in the first quarter, too, offensively, that it was just not there that night, and that was very evident as the game progressed. Second, third quarter, both very forgettable, and I was just waiting for West Virginia to decide to hang 100, because they very well could have if Dana Holgorsen didn't call off the dogs, and he did, mercifully. And it's one you can't even, like, I don't even know if you watched the film of that game, quite frankly. I'm sure they did, but I won't ever go back and watch that game again, because there was nothing memorable about it whatsoever.
Yeah, that was the hungriest team Baylor has faced all year.
Oh, yeah, they were jazzed up. I mean, yeah. I really wonder if West Virginia is going to have anything close to a pulse like that in Austin this weekend. I seriously doubt it. They're better at home, it's well documented, but, I mean, they were, you could just tell in the pregame warm-ups, like, West Virginia is so amped up for this game that Baylor's going to have to play really well, and they just did not.
Yeah, and they showed it from the moment that game snapped. I mean, they were out there hitting people, flying around to the football. They came up with a really good game plan, I thought, and Baylor didn't really have an adjustment for it. It felt like there was nothing they could do to stop what was about to happen. And so that was really discouraging to see that. As Coach Rule said, they run that 3-3 stack, which is something they won't see the rest of conference play. But I think that really, you know, messed with the offense a little bit, especially the receivers and the quarterback and even the O-line. I mean, the blitzing was getting home whenever it wanted to. Brewer was running for his life. McClendon was running for his life. And so there was really just a whole lot of struggles on the offensive end. And on the defensive end, it was the same thing that we've seen all year. There's really not much more you can say about it. It was explosive play after explosive play, deep ball after deep ball. They were just killing them. And then, you know, eventually they softened them so much that the run game started getting home. They had the huge run late in the game. And, you know, that is just something that it doesn't seem like it will be fixed this year at all. So the only hope really is that you can force enough negative plays that you don't give up as many.
You're right.
And that's really the only hope, because they're about to face a team that does many of the similar things that West Virginia did. And that's kind of my main takeaway from that game, and something that I noted going into the game was I wanted to see how Baylor handled this kind of spread offense type team that's going to take shots deep, because there's some teams on their schedule that are going to do exactly that. And so Baylor's going to have to limit those big plays while also forcing more negative plays than they were able to against West Virginia.
Yeah, this team just isn't good enough to make any mistakes and overcome them. They can maybe make one or two minor mistakes, but big mistakes, if there's one or two of those, then this team just really, you know, isn't equipped right now to be able to overcome that. Especially, I mean, let's just say they played poorly in pretty much every facet except for the defense early on. But other than that, I mean, even the defense, and look, I don't blame the defense for being gassed, because I was thinking throughout that first quarter, like, get them off the field. My God, they're not going to make it through this game. And sure enough, like, by the second quarter, I mean, it was just, they were roasted. And, you know, it is what it is. It's kind of frightening to think of who they've still got left and what those teams are equipped to do, because, like you said, the defense just isn't going to just be fixed this week. And they've got to figure out a way at some point to limit the number of big plays. Every defense in the Big 12 gives them up, but they give up an unimaginable amount of them. And West Virginia was just feasting however they wanted to, whichever way they wanted to. And, you know, like you said, the run game came alive, which has been basically dormant for the Mountaineers all year long. They haven't been running on anybody, really. And they ran all over Baylor after they softened them up, tenderized them up. So, yeah, it was really bad. Not really anything great to take away from that, including the injury at quarterback to Charlie Brewer. Concussion at some point in that game. But I will say, you know, Matt Rhule pointed out he was very angry about alleging that Charlie wasn't right going into that game, and he brought up, you know, the first couple of drives that, no, they didn't really do anything with the football, but, you know, those plays that occurred that kept a drive from continuing on weren't Charlie Brewer not making a throw. It was a receiver shocking not making a catch, not making a tough catch. That's been another problem all year long. I think Denzel Mims got alligator arms early on in that game, and it's crazy to me how good he can be, how much he disappears in certain games. But OU in Texas, here he is. Although in the fourth quarter against Texas, he was also out. But, you know, he disappeared ultimately. Jalen Hurd had one go right through his hand. So it would have been interesting to see if they could have just gotten a first down or two. Like, maybe they don't go and score, but at least they keep the defense off the field. And having said all that, at the same time, it wouldn't have mattered ultimately. They played a better team that was better in every single way. And it is what it is. You took one on the chin. You lost in Morgantown like pretty much everybody does. And you just got to move on from it.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, that's probably going to be the most focused team at that point that they're going to play all year, I would think. I don't think it's going to be very easy for anyone else to duplicate that, especially since they have two home games, one neutral site game, and then the Iowa State game, who I don't feel like will be quite as jazzed up. And so I think going forward, I think it's time for Baylor to have one of those games. And I honestly believe that this is the kind of game, this Oklahoma State game, that they should be able to come out and have that kind of gutsy performance where they focused all week, and they're the more focused team coming into this game. Oklahoma State just had a big win, and so I think it's one of those where Baylor needs to have a game like that.
Are they capable of doing that, though? Are they good enough to do that?
I think they are. I really do, and the reason I say that is because we've seen throughout the year when Baylor's offense can consistently move the ball, and they have been able to in quite a few games, and they've been able to keep offenses off the field, I think they can do that to Oklahoma State. And we saw Kansas State do that to Oklahoma State on the road. I think Baylor's got a shot to do that, and I think they're capable of it just because I think they can control the flow of the game. And I think with the crowd and the momentum and things like that, I think the defense could, you know, maybe make a few more plays, and that's what you're hoping for. And I know we haven't seen it much all year, but the hope is that they can make enough plays, maybe force a couple turnovers like they did versus Kansas State, to give themselves a real chance at maybe pulling away or creating a little separation.
Yeah, okay. Well, you're right, they have shown flashes at times. It's like, but I hate that, and this is not talking to you at all, just it seems like every week we say kind of the same thing with this team. You know what I mean? It's like, if they can just, you know, not make mistakes, but man, they ultimately do. You're right, though. That's how they're gonna have to win this weekend. So let's talk about this weekend, because enough about West Virginia. Probably already spent too much time on that game. That one's behind everybody now. Clear that and move on. And it's homecoming weekend, so not saying anything negative about any fans who don't show up at games or fill their seats or whatever by saying this. This should be the best crowd of the year just because it's homecoming, you know, and it should be about as full as it has been, if not more so than for any other game this year, I would imagine. Now, would it shock me if we go out there on Saturday and it's a disappointing homecoming crowd? No, because of what just happened, which was also what was deflating, I think, is that you had so many people, even those naysayers and non-believers and all of that, that were like, you know what? This team played hard. I'm going to cheer them on. And then they go out and they just get just wrecked. So it was very deflating in that sense. But I would imagine being homecoming weekend, people who don't go to any games go to this one game every year. It should be a pretty festive atmosphere and should provide a little extra level of energy that certainly you weren't going to have in Morgantown. And sometimes you haven't had at home this year. But a little extra pep in your step, a week and a couple of days extra to refocus and analyze everything and start gearing up for the Cowboys. So that alone, I feel like just being back at home and you know, maybe playing a team who maybe coming off of a little bit of a high and coming down a little bit after getting juiced up for Texas last weekend will provide a little bit of an advantage for the Bears this weekend.
I think you're exactly right, and it really should. The crowd should be awesome compared to the other games this year. There's actually an event basically going on, so fans more fans will be at this game.
If you don't like the product so far this year, you have other reasons to be there.
Exactly, and so I think the crowd will be just fine for this football game. I agree. I think Oklahoma State could be coming in off a little bit of a high. They beat Texas, really didn't look very good in the second half, but had a huge first half and were able to kind of ride that on to win that game. But I just look at it and I think, you know, can Baylor really start strong and allow the crowd to really get in the game? Because, you know, we've seen kind of polar opposites. Kansas State game, they were able to do that. The crowd was able to get into it. You're able to get the win. The Duke game, not so much. You know, you allowed the other team to get up, and then people started leaving, and then you don't have the home field advantage anymore. So I think that's really important. Baylor really has to get off to a good start. And not a great one, but a good one. They got to show that it's going to be a competitive game, and I think they can do that.
Will they trot out in Sailor Bear uniforms to extra energize this crowd, even though I know not everybody's in favor of anything Sailor Bear related? I'm indifferent to it, to be perfectly honest about it, but I don't have the ties to that logo that a lot of people do that reminds them of family or growing up or whatever, when they were at Baylor kind of a thing. You know, that's been a little rumor floating around. There's been little teases all week long by Baylor football and by the university itself that all started with the Sailor Bear helmet that was on the letterhead of their homecoming email to alumni and students. And then it just kind of has blossomed from there, including a couple little five-second video teasers. There was one on Wednesday of just a player with a Nike glove on slapping a Sailor Bear sticker on a pole. Just a lot of hinting going on. Do you think we see them break that out and add a little extra spice to homecoming weekend?
I think they will.
Yeah.
I got a really good feeling that they will. We saw the clean white helmets at practice.
So. Yeah, they were brand new, shiny, like no scuff marks. Compared to the typical black Vices, all black, black face mask, everything that they've been wearing at every practice so far this year, those things protect you from, you know, concussions and head injuries. They don't prevent them entirely, but they have a better absorption rate or whatever. And those practice helmets, as you've seen, are scuffed up. There's marks all over them. You can see the wear and tear on those bad boys. And so to walk in on Wednesday for Matt Rule's media session and see these shiny white helmets with these, I don't know, I'm going to call them like Hunter Green or Kelly Green face masks. It was definitely noticeable.
Yeah, it was. And I saw them when we came in, and you mentioned it. And I guess
I asked Jerry Hill. I was trying to get a little info, actually, because I know if anybody knows, he would know. And I'm like, hey, are they typically wearing those helmets? And he just kind of, no. And then just didn't really say much after that.
Yeah, and I have a feeling they're going to pull them out. I guess my thought is it'll probably be the white helmet. With it seemed like they're going to go with the white Sailor Bear instead of the yellow one, which I think is probably a good idea, you know, to match. Because I don't think they're going to bring in a new uniform.
No.
Think it's just going to be the helmet. That would be my thought.
Yeah, I know they've got all sorts of color combinations. I feel like unless it's the ultimate troll job, that they're going to have Sailor Bear on that helmet. And I would imagine, I mean, it's definitely going to be the white helmets with green face masks, but yeah, the logo that's been around has looked more of like that green and white. So I could see that kind of a plain almost, which probably would look better than the yellow Sailor Bear. I don't know. I think it actually probably look a little bit sharper, for as sharp as you can make like kind of a old cartoony image. Yeah. But I'm thinking white helmets and, well, the best look to me would be white helmets, green jerseys, and white pants. That's what I would roll with if you're going to break that out. But there's a lot of combinations, obviously, that they could use. They're not going to go all black, obviously. Yeah. But I'd go white, green, white, I think, if you are going to do what they're sort of teasing. And if not, again, well done on the troll job by everybody over there in marketing.
Sure. Yeah, they've sold it. They've gotten everyone on board to go see it. I like what the combo you said. I think white, green, green would look good, too. Mm-hmm. So either of those. But I do think they will break it out this weekend. I think it's pretty cool. I mean, it's nice to have a new look for homecoming.
Sure.
And kind of try to get even more excitement, because like we talked about, they're going to need it, you know, in this game to, you know, kind of try to ride the crowd out to try to get a big win, really, in conference play.
They've teased it. I think they've had people talking about it. Now people are curious. You know, I don't know if they're going to – I'm sure they're going to release the uniforms in a tweet at some point today. I really think it would be better to just do it on Saturday, like run out and like here's if they're doing something. And again, I don't know, but man, if they're not, then they've put a lot of effort into just fooling a lot of people, because everything says they're gonna break out this old logo. Why not let people get into the gates and have to see it for themselves rather than giving it away for free? But it should add a little something to homecoming, because like I said, I know it's a sentimental logo for a lot of people. And, you know, just, again, something different, something you can have some fun with on the video boards and unveiling and that kind of a deal. So I'm all for it, and I'm all for a little change here and there. You know, I don't want to see it every week, obviously, but I think so far, well done on the marketing team's behalf, because at the very least, they've got a lot of people curious and interested in talking about it.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say that if they don't put out a video, that's a pretty for sure sign that they're definitely doing something.
Yeah.
And if they put out the video, obviously, if it's in it, they're wearing it. If not, you know, whatever. But that would kind of be a good sign. And I think it's good, because we kind of know that next year they're probably going to have a uniform shakeup. So it's nice to, you know, maybe I'm not saying that Sailor Bear is going to be part of the process, because I have no idea on that. But what I would say
Sailor Bear needs to trust the process.
Yeah. But what I would say is it's nice to see and kind of envision what a different look, you know, could look like.
Yeah.
Going forward.
Yeah. With the helmets they were wearing at practice on, I guess that was Wednesday, you know, the shiny white was evident, but also the green tone of the face mask. Mm-hmm. It was that darker green, which I prefer to like the brighter green, because I just think bright green and yellow is just, it's not my bag. It's not my favorite. Like the Packers, like a lot of people on the board have said, I don't like that. That's not my jam. I like the idea of the darker green, and that's what it looked like. So if they may do the all white, although that'd be at home, that would be silly. It'd be more of a road look. So I don't know. It's interesting, if anything else, for the uniform heads out there. I know some people listening right now, I don't care, just win. And I get it, because yeah, they desperately need a win with four games to go. There's a lot to unpack as far as what this also means for red shirts and things like that. But four games to go, you need two W's in these next four games. You've got Oklahoma State. It's your next to last home game. And, you know, this is a team that about a month ago, Grayson, looking ahead at the schedule, I would have said that's a win. But now I'm really not so sure about that. Not because of what Oklahoma State did last weekend, although I think that did kind of boost their confidence. Meanwhile, Baylor's just, I can't get a read on them. You know, it's one thing to hear kind of the same thing, sort of the robotic answers of trust in the process and we don't worry about the other team and all those things. And that's all fine and well and good as long as you're meaning it when you say it. Last year, I don't think a lot of guys meant it when they really said it. That's just what they felt they had to say, because that's what they were being drilled, what was being drilled into their heads. This year, I think guys really mean that. They can clear it better than fans do and move on to the next thing. But I'm not getting any sort of like, man, they're amped up for this. I'm not getting any really kind of a pulse whatsoever. Not that they're, you know, catatonic. Not that they don't have a pulse. Just I can't tell if this is a game to get excited and they're going to be amped up and ready to go, or if this team's just kind of, just going about their business. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of hard to get a read this week.
Yeah, we weren't given any favors because we talked to, you know, two younger guys during our press, you know, time. And so Raleigh's a little bit older, but...
But he hadn't talked much at all.
Yeah, and Connor, obviously, a true freshman.
And I don't think he's a big talker anyways in that setting.
No, he was excited. You could tell he was excited, but, you know, before the Texas game, I think we got to talk to, like, Pat Lawrence. And, you know, or Blackmore, I can't remember who it was, but I think that is kind of a big difference, and that's where we get a lot of our vibes of what's going on is those times. But I will say, I don't know if obviously this may not be true, but what would you say if I said that I think this game's a must win to make a bowl game?
I wouldn't disagree. I'll disagree slightly. I don't think it's a must win because I think they can still accomplish it. They're not going to do it against Iowa State. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now, I'm picking that as a loss all day long. And the only question will be when we get to that game eventually will be by how much.
So you think they can win two in a row to end the year?
Against Texas and Texas Tech and TCU, I think they can, but I would not bank on it. So, yeah, in most ways, I agree with you. This is a must win. Now, are they totally screwed if they don't win this game? Not entirely, but they're pretty screwed if they don't win this game. So I'm mostly in agreement with you.
Yeah, I just look at it, and I think this is kind of a perfect opportunity for a win in my mind. Just looking at it.
This is the most winnable game left.
TCU has to be on there. They've looked really bad, and they still have a tough part of their schedule coming up.
But I think we'd be underestimating how much Gary Patterson will want to win that game. True. To Mike Gundy, this is just another game, and they're still feeling the effects, you hope, of last week that's kind of got them, you know, still caught up in beating Texas and not choking it away for once. But TCU is going to be the best TCU team that they can be when they roll into Waco to play Baylor. Okay. So I think they pull out all the tricks. I think they make whatever changes they have to. Now, will it matter? I don't know. I'd pick Baylor to win that game right now. But just in rivalry games, I'm never going to bank on a rivalry game being the easiest game that you have left.
I would definitely say it's those two, and I think you'd be in agreement. It's those two are the two that you think, okay, Baylor has a really good shot at winning these games. Oklahoma State, obviously, the tougher one in my mind, just because I think they do some things offensively that scare me a little more than TCU does. But and I mean this is also the leading sack team in the country.
Great.
And that's something that Baylor has struggled with mightily, is protecting the quarterback. So, you know, it's going to be a very, you know, a game where Baylor's going to have to do some things they haven't been able to do all year in order to win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of scary because you look at it and go, okay, they haven't been able to protect the passer. Now you're facing a team that's great at getting after the passer. They haven't been able to, you know, really the past few weeks put up enough points to really control the outcome of the game. And against Oklahoma State, they're going to have to score some points. And they give up explosive plays, which is something Oklahoma State feasts on. So you look at it from that perspective and it goes, man, this is going to be, I mean, they're going to literally have to do things that they haven't done all season long.
You got to grow up.
It's a little scary. Yeah.
They have to grow up. They have to grow up. They have to stop making the same stupid mistakes. And I don't even like using the word stupid there because I don't want to talk about these players that way. They're not stupid, but the boneheaded kind of mistakes, you know what I mean, of dropping an easy catch or stopping short of a first down or, you know, just the little tiny things is like death by a thousand paper cuts. And I feel like that's what this team does more often than not, and really just – you know, shoots itself in the foot, and then in certain games goes back, reloads, and then starts shooting the other foot. They can't do that this weekend, because if they do, then this game could get really ugly. Not West Virginia ugly, but it could get ugly. It could get out of hand, and that would just be an awful outcome in front of your homecoming crowd, who you're having to kind of like prod and poke to get to show up to games anyways at this point. Another loss, you know, a streak now going on with the losses. That would just be a nightmare. They're going to have to play a clean football game. And can they? I mean, I don't know. We've seen moments of it, but we've seen far more moments where they show that that's just who they are. And I don't know how that's correctable in just a little over a week's time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a tough one. But let's talk a little bit about this Oklahoma State team.
Sure.
What do you see from them when you've seen them play so far this year? Do you have any read on what they do?
Well, I mean, dynamic skill guys. Obviously, Justice Hill is always the first one mentioned. Tylan Wallace had a monster game against Texas. He's actually had a monster year. I mean, he's probably going to have 100 yards on Saturday. It's just a matter of, does he have 200 yards on Saturday? Thank goodness Jalen McCleskey quit the team before the season started. But even then, they've got a couple of good receivers led by Wallace. Their quarterback play with Taylor Cornelius, I feel like that's an area that's probably going to be a little bit blown out of proportion based on his performance last week, because that was easily his best game. He is not typically that good. He's also not typically running like that. I don't know what happened against Texas where that became such a go-to for them and why it was so successful. But he's not someone that scares me at all. It's really more so the skill guys that scare me. I see average to above average quarterback play, a guy who's just in a good system with good players around him that can make big plays if you allow him to, and especially if you allow him to just sit back there, which Baylor's allowed a lot of quarterbacks to just sit back and pick them apart. And then defensively, I mean, leading sacks, you know, team in the country, really good defensive backs. I don't have as much of a read on their linebackers. Never really focused as much there. But obviously, D-line and secondary, very, very good. And a tough team. I mean, although they just, up until last week, I mean, really haven't put it together all that much. I mean, I think last week's kind of, they either really, truly did put it together last week, and that's who they're going to be from here on out, or it was they got up for a big game. And quite frankly, I can't tell, and I won't be able to tell until Saturday. Again, a month ago you asked me, I say Baylor can beat that team. Now, I don't know, and it's as much because of what they did last week, signs of life, and also what we've seen most recently from Baylor. So I see a good team, a team that's not a 10-game winner like Mike Gundy, you know, is able to seemingly reel off every year, but a team that's just a shade below that when they play at their best. They just haven't played at their best at all times this year.
Yeah, and I think you kind of hit on it perfectly. I think the most important player in this game, in my opinion, is Taylor Cornelius. Mm-hmm. And the thing about him is, so he is top 10 in yards per attempt and top 10 in yards per completion. So basically what
another
he's doing
stat
is,
that Baylor's not very good at.
Exactly. So he's going to take shots deep consistently. He's going to continue to throw the ball deep and throw the ball deep. But where that has gotten him in trouble is that he's only completing 60% of his passes. So my read on that is that if Baylor can force him into tough throws and not allow him to just stand there and throw the deep ball the whole game, they could have a lot of success here. And they could force him into some turnovers and force him into being a little sporadic. He does have 8 interceptions on the year, which is obviously kind of a high number. Through 8 games, that's literally one interception a game. So Baylor's got a good shot to force a turnover there. So I would say that Baylor really has to focus on trying to eliminate that deep ball. And I don't know how you do it without getting more pressure on the quarterback, because we've seen the coverage just hasn't been able to hold up over the past few weeks, especially last week. But yeah, so he's definitely a guy that wants to stand in there and throw it as far as he can every time. He doesn't want to throw it short. He doesn't want to take, you know, short completions. And I think Baylor needs to key on that and kind of maybe force him into bad throws deep, ones where you have safety help, ones where you can make a play on the ball. Don't know if that happens, but that's the hope. As far as his running, he does have 4 games this year where he's got over 10 carries. And his biggest thing is he's, what, 6'6", 235 pounds. So he's not getting a lot of yards, but what he is doing is every time he runs, he's falling forward.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time. And so Baylor hasn't done a good job against running quarterbacks, and so I think you're going to see him on the move a little bit, and Baylor has to be sure that they are wrapping him up and making these tackles, because he's a little more athletic than I think people give him credit for, and you know, he can be a first down guy, a guy that moves the chain consistently on third down, and so Baylor's definitely going to have to prepare for that.
Let's keep in mind, too, that even though his stats were kind of impressive in the first couple of games, they were ready to bench him. The fan base was ready to bench him, so it hasn't been all sunshine and roses, but you know, these last couple of weeks he's woken up, and I think their most glaring result that stands out to me was that 31-12 drubbing in Manhattan against K-State. But if you look at what K-State did, that was the Alex Barnes show. That was him basically you know, dominating the Oklahoma State defense. After Oklahoma State got out to the early lead, was able to run for another 200 yards, four TDs. Baylor's not going to be able to do that. They just they're not built for that. They're not built to have a successful run game right now. This would be the week to kind of break it out, but. That's how K-State was able to do it and also make some plays defensively. So there's a formula, but he was also just not very good in that game either. So can they shake him? Can they rattle him? Can they roll him? Can they shake, rattle, and roll Taylor Cornelius? Noah, yeah, can they get a little bit of pressure and kind of get to him early and not let him get comfortable? I mean, that's because if he gets comfortable, then he's going to feel like, man, I'm cruising along now. I've got this, baby. I mean, from the Texas game to now, he's going to be full of confidence. And I think he's going to be full of confidence when this game starts. But if you can get Greg Roberts back there or James Lynch back there early on and kind of do what you did against West Virginia, like in the first couple of series, save the, you know, immediate touchdown to start that West Virginia game, but play that way and just not give up multiple big plays or a bunch of turnovers to keep handing the football back, then, you know, start to a little doubt creep in or mistake can be made here there that you can hopefully take advantage of and not let it slip through your fingertips.
Well, K-State, you're exactly right. They had the perfect game plan.
Yeah.
And this is kind of exactly what I'm talking about. He was only, 49% passing in that game. He threw for 184 yards and two picks. I mean, he was terrible. He was not good, not efficient at all. He did have a rushing touchdown in that game, but Kansas State had the perfect formula. They took away the run game. Didn't allow Justice Hill to get going, didn't allow them to just run all over him. But then they also were able to get pressure on Cornelius. They had five sacks in the game, and that's a big number. That's a really big number, and I think, you know, that allowed them to get Oklahoma State off the field consistently. And when you're able to do that, when you're able to get pressure, you can force some turnovers as well, and they were able to do that, and I think that's going to be something that Baylor's just going to have to figure out how to do that. How to replicate a similar performance to that, because offensively, you know, in that game, Kansas State really wasn't that good other than Alex Barnes. I mean, their passing was pretty mediocre, 130 yards. I mean, so yeah, you're exactly right. They found a way to just run all over them while also getting pressure on Cornelius and getting them off the field. And that's kind of going to be the strategy for Baylor. But one interesting thing to note is that was only Oklahoma State's second away game all year. Their other one was Kansas. So they've only gone on the road twice.
What has Kansas done recently?
Yeah, they beat TCU.
Oh, did they? Oh, did they beat TCU?
Wait, that their first win since, 2016? Who'd they beat?
In the Big 12, yes.
Yeah, who'd they beat?
I believe they beat Texas.
Oh, the Texas Longhorns. Oh, okay.
Yes.
So they have two wins in 3 years against Texas and TCU.
TCU. Yes.
That's an interesting
stat. That is very interesting.
Yeah, that was definitely a good outcome.
That was insane. They nearly choked that away. Kind of like Oklahoma State nearly choked away the Texas game last week, they were able to eke it out. But,
yeah,
you know, back to what you were saying, though. I mean, just about kind of what Baylor's going to have to do is – it'd be great to have a run game in a game like this, because I feel like if Baylor had a consistent run game, then I'd probably have no problem picking them to win this game, even with the deficiencies defensively and the constant need to give up big plays on defense. If they had a little bit of run game to kind of control the clock like K-State was able to do, that'd make me feel a lot better about things. But their run game is kind of their short passing game, and unlike last week, you can't have Jalen Hurd and Denzel Mims dropping balls or having passes go through their hands that lead to either turnovers or a loss of a down. You're going to have to string those together. If you feel like you can't run the football on this team, which, hey, again, great D-line and, you know, really good secondary, ultimately it boils down to kind of like what I said earlier in the year, players are going to have to make some plays. Like, bag on coaching, bag on play calling, bag on all that all you want. Players are going to have to make some plays eventually, and we have at times seen them do that. You know, sometimes it's work. Sometimes, like Jameson Houston getting screwed over an interception in Austin, it hasn't. But at least they were making a play, trying to make a play. You're going to have some of that this weekend. Guys are going to have to step up and just refuse to allow it to continue to happen.
Yeah,
if that makes
sense.
Agree.
No, that's perfectly, you know, stated, because – no, I felt like they did that a little bit in the Kansas State game, and they were able to run the ball in that Kansas State game, which is something that, you know, since that game, which was the last time they were at home, they haven't been able to run the ball at all. And so I wonder if you come back home, if maybe they're able to find a way to run it a little bit, because Oklahoma State's rush defense looks good. I believe they're in the top 50 in run defense. But you have to remember, in college, the sacks count against that number. And, you know, they lead the nation in sacks. So that's a big part of it. If you took away all their sacks, they would not be a top 50 run defense. And so I think that's important to note. And I do think Baylor may have a little success running the football. And the key stat that I pointed out last week was Baylor has to run for at least 150 yards if they want to win any football game.
And that's so low,
quite frankly. That's so low, but they've won every game that they've run for 150 yards.
Well, that means something then. I mean, I don't think it just means like they just happen to do that against lesser competition or anything. That means like, no, that's what's most effective for them. Yeah. So we'll see if they can't put that together. I mean, I hope we see a little bit of Lovett, a little bit of Ebner, a little bit of Hasty. I hope we see all those guys. We didn't really see Ebner or Lovett till the second half of that game, but I think they're going to need all three, and somebody to emerge to be that guy if they're going to have that type of a day on the day on the ground.
I think we might see Hurd a little bit back there too.
Fine with me.
Yeah, I just get this feeling that with Gavin Holmes coming back, they might be able to give Hurd the ball in the backfield a little bit more. Maybe a few more carries, because they didn't run him at all, really, against West Virginia. I don't even know if he had a carry.
I don't even remember.
In that game.
I blocked that game out already.
Yeah, but
it's been deleted from my brain.
But I could see it, and he's had the most success in that role. It would just be something interesting, and of course, I just mentioned Gavin Holmes coming back. That's kind of a big development because we saw what he did last year before he got hurt.
Couple of tidbits, and then we'll get into the rest of the podcast and get into mailbag and all of that. But first things first, how do you feel about Jalen McClendon probably starting at quarterback and Charlie Brewer maybe being available? Although I would almost rather him just not play this week. I mean, if he can play, you play him. But based on how he looked, if there's any doubt, I know they won't play him. So that's not even a question mark. If he's fully healthy, you feel safe trotting him out there and feel fine with rolling him out there and just, hey, clear that West Virginia game? Or do you think it's going to be Jalen McClendon and then maybe a little Gary Bohannon?
I think Charlie starts.
Okay.
I do. I just get a vibe that he's going to be all right. I don't know. We were in there yesterday, and he looked fine to me. Obviously, you have to pass tests and everything like that. But
and he's not, as of this podcast recording, done that yet.
Yes. So, I get this vibe that he's going to play, and I think he will start. Now,
it's the nation's leading sack team.
That's tough to think about. But I have a lot more confidence in him than I do McClendon. And
really?
I don't know if that's we've talked about this all year, and we have both really been like, oh, start Charlie. And I just feel the same way, and I felt that way the whole year. And I think McClendon's a good quarterback, but I haven't seen him, you know, really come out. And I mean, I know Abilene Christian, you know, whatever. I don't really count that game.
Yeah.
I'm talking against a real competitive team, going out and doing some things. I know people want to say, oh, last week he looked so good. That game was over. That game was so over.
Yeah.
That was a practice session, and he was able to go out and make some plays. Great. That doesn't mean he's going to be able to do that from the first snap of an actual competitive game. And I have concerns. I really do. I love that he can throw the deep ball. But as I told you, I think that the way Baylor wins this game is by consistently moving the chains. And the guy that gives them the best chance to move the chains consistently is Charlie Brewer. Yes, you may hit a home run ball, but I think you'll also throw a pick or two.
Right.
And I would rather take, you know, the steady stream of moving the football than I would a couple big plays in the game.
I do love his arm strength, though. My gosh, if Charlie Brewer had that arm strength, he'd be a ward candidate and an O-line, too, to allow him to sit back and use that arm strength. But I do love McClendon's arm strength. I feel like there's better opportunities for the receivers with McClendon in there. But if you're having to scramble around, then, yeah, it's probably better if Brewer's in there. I'm just curious about that. I have no idea who will start on Saturday. Everything up until you really saying that has led me to believe it'll be McClendon. But I know Charlie's practiced this week. Of course, it'd be a no contact. So, that'll be interesting to find out on Saturday, because we won't find out before then.
Yeah, absolutely will be. And, I mean, it's just a hunch. It's not based off any knowledge. It's just a hunch. And I do agree with you. I mean, if McClendon goes out there and, you know, can utilize his deep ball and be able to get enough time to use it, great. Yeah, that could be a difference maker. It really could be, but
he just has to get it out of his hands.
Exactly. And
that's when I knew something was wrong with Charlie, is when he's swallowing the football basically last week. And I know he didn't have a whole lot of time on many of those plays, but he did have, when he started to be the guy who's holding on to the football too long, that's when I was like, oh no, what is going on here?
Yeah.
That was kind of scary. Do we see Gary Bohannon this week?
I've seen, you know, some people asking about that, and sure, he'll come in.
We're going to see him in the next month for sure.
Well, sure. Why not? He'll come in for a play or two, maybe run the ball. I personally don't see a need for it. If you're in third and one, I'd rather just give the ball to Jalen Hurd.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because I think this is going to be a competitive game. I don't think that there's any point in rushing a freshman out there in a game that is going to be either very tight or, you know, I would just say a game of this importance where you know you need to win this game. I don't know that it's necessary.
No, it's not one where you trot out your freshman to show him off. Yeah. No. I think he could be used in a certain package, like you were saying.
Yeah.
But again, if it's just to use him on third and short or something, then you've got Jalen Hurd or even McClendon or Charlie to be able to show that are capable of doing that. So he wouldn't be necessary there. And he is still a freshman. As much hype and optimism, and I definitely get the feeling from Matt Rhule, there's kind of like a sly smile almost that he kind of has to hold back when even thinking about Bohannon. I don't know if you pick up on that either, but it's just kind of like he's very confident in him. It's just it's still got him like kind of hibernating and warming up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're grooming him.
They are very much grooming him, but they really truly believe he's the dude. Like, he'll be the dude eventually. So that'll be interesting to see. I'm not banking on seeing him, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him a little bit here and there. Because again, it doesn't hurt at this point. It's not going to change his redshirt status at all. Gavin Holmes coming back, though, getting back to you saying that. We're going to see him. I wonder if he can't bring some of that consistency and big play ability that a lot of these other receivers have maybe flashed at times, but every single one has dropped passes. Every single one has looked ahead before seeing the ball into their hands. Every single one's gotten tripped up by, like, the last defender, and therefore even more reason for why there's been a lack of big explosive plays for this team. I feel like he's the kind of maybe little jump starter that has been so itching to play and is so confident in his own abilities that maybe he can kind of kickstart that receiving core a little bit and elevate the play of everybody around him. At least that's my hope.
Yeah, and they used him in such a variety of ways last year. It was really exciting to see what his future could be on this team. They put him in motion a ton, gave him sweep runs. They, you know, threw the ball in the flat to him. They threw the deep ball to him. I mean, it was kind of just a good variety for Gavin Holmes, and it was tough to see him get hurt because he was really having a great game in that Tech game. And so
I don't want a dirty hit at all.
Yeah, no, not at all. But I'm excited to see the kind of impact he can have, because like you've said, some of the receivers have not been consistent enough. And I really think that if Charlie does play, his impact will be even greater, because I think we did see a little bit of a connection there between them. I don't know who Jalen's connection is with quite yet, but I think we've seen it with Charlie and Gavin. And so I'm really interested to see what kind of role he does play. Coach Rhule did mention it seems like he's still going to be restricted a little bit, a little limited, maybe not playing every snap, but he's definitely going to be in there, and they're definitely going to try to get him the ball in any way they can.
Who else do you think we see from that group of players?
Oh, I think Mark Milton seems like a guy he keeps bringing up as maybe just special teams. I don't know that they'll throw him out at cornerback.
B.J. Hanspard, special teams.
Same thing.
He's played a couple games, though.
Yeah, because Milton's only played in one, I think.
Yeah, maybe just the one. I know Hanspard, because they pulled him off the streets basically out of the hotel or to the hotel. What was that, a few weeks ago? And then I want to say he played in like the last game or the game prior. So he's had two games under his belt with four to go.
Squirrel? Do you think this is a week for Squirrel?
He's got two under his belt,
yeah,
too.
I know. That's why
they kind of threw away that Texas game, I feel like.
I didn't like that.
No, I didn't either. I was really disappointed in that, but I could kind of see maybe. I really stretch see the usage there, but ultimately I think that was a wasted opportunity. I don't know, man. That's what makes the redshirt thing so fascinating is you have to also take into account, like, okay, what if we do make a bowl game? Now, granted, that doesn't mean like those guys are going to get don't even have to play in that game because they're going to get so much extra practice time. That's really what's most important for those guys. And you want your older players to play in that bowl game because, by God, they've earned it at this point.
Sure.
So Squirrel with four. I don't know. I think I'd much rather use Squirrel against TCU and Tech.
Last two.
Yeah.
I'm kind of with you on that, I think.
I don't think you want him in this game. But I think especially if you don't win this game and you're definitely not beating Iowa State, you got to bring out all the big guns for those last two. So I would have Squirrel. I'd have everybody ready to go for those last two games.
What about Braylon Taylor and Ben Sims? Those are two guys that he's mentioned a little bit a few times. What do you think that they maybe could get in? Neither one has played.
Yeah, I think we'll see him. I don't know how much we'll see him or even if we'll see him this weekend. But, yeah, I definitely think we'll see both of them at some point. I mean, and it's hard to know, too. I mean, Braylon Taylor, he brings up more than Ben Sims. But I know they're very excited about this young tight end group, but that could be a really dominant force, those four, Tyler Henderson as well, when they all kind of mature and grow together. But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised just to spell Henley a little bit, if anything else, because, my gosh, that young man has put in all the work, and he's shown his flaws as a freshman, but those are going to get better, you know, dropping an easy touchdown catch or missing this block. And I think, you know, it couldn't hurt to have some other guys get that opportunity, at least in the blocking, you know, scheme of things, to kind of get their feet wet a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And Henley's done a great job. You know, he's been thrown into the fire.
Really should have redshirted this year. I mean,
and he's taken his lumps. And really, I mean, a big part of him starting was because he early enrolled. He knew the offense and everything a little bit more. And, you know, he's done a good job. And it's kind of the same thing he said with Xavier Newman last year. You know, these guys are going to take their lumps now so that in the future they're able to deliver.
Right.
You know, deliver the blows instead of taking them. Kind of the same with Connor Galvin.
Yeah.
Who we saw in the depth chart.
That was another tidbit I was going to bring up. Galvin started at Morgantown. Morgantown. Hey, kid, go play left tackle for us. What'd you think of how he played? I mean, rules seem to be pretty encouraged by it. He obviously is going to need to gain a lot of weight. He's not big enough yet. But, I mean, to go start in Morgantown and hold your own for the most part, I mean, as much as you could expect, it was encouraging. And I know ideally you'd like him to have redshirted, but ultimately they're going to be losing some linemen, and he's going to have to be, you know, one of the guys, like the dudes for them, if this O-line's ever going to get anywhere. And that's he's going to be playing a lot from here on out, it seems like.
Yeah, he was just okay. You know, for a freshman, he was great. For a true freshman, he played great. But, I mean, he was not dominating matchups by any means.
Wouldn't expect him against West Virginia's JUCO-laden D-line.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And Kenny Bigelow.
Yeah, but he did show me some things. He showed me some flashes, and I was really skeptical on his ability to pass protect coming out of high school because he was very good at run blocking. Very, very good, but wasn't. I mean, it just didn't seem like he was put in many pass protect situations, but he actually looked okay in this game. And so that was encouraging because he's still a true freshman. And you can see the ceiling with him because, you know, when we talked to him at media time, it looks like he's gotten way bigger than when I saw him at camps earlier in the year. I mean, maybe 20 pounds bigger.
Did he have a beard back then?
No.
He's got the beard. I was going to actually ask him that, but the media session got like stopped, so I didn't get my question in, but that's how I was going to end it. I was trying to go with a good question, somewhat lighten the mood for everybody, but I only really got that with Matt Rhule and finding out his favorite Halloween candy.
Yeah. Butterfingers.
Butterfingers.
Perfect for his receiver. For the receivers.
See, you know,
that's what
somebody
on the boards.
Somebody said that on Twitter as well, and it's funny because when I got back from the media session, I was just sending a couple of notes out there on Twitter just to keep it active because otherwise I don't really tweet that much. That was one I actually paused and I was like, do I want to put this out there? Because I know what the response is going to be.
Yeah.
And then again, I don't care. So, yeah, of course I put that out there. And of course, there were those types of responses. Yeah. I think there was only one on Twitter, but yeah, on the board a lot
we
more.
Heard
that.
Yeah, I saw it all over Twitter. But yeah, but just going back to Connor Galvin, I think that in the future we're seeing, you know, what he's going to be able to do, and it's pretty exciting to have a guy at left tackle that, I mean, he might start from now on.
Of course, yes.
I mean, there's a good possibility if Malin and from Morgan can't get to 100%, which I still don't believe either one is at 100%, especially Malin. I just don't think he's
I think he quite came there. Back probably a little. I mean, again, this is not doubting the medical staff because nobody's ever going to be 100%. But, you know, it's almost like they needed him so badly that he came back, and I'm sure he was fine and checked out and everything. But it was just at the time, it was very hard for me to imagine that he just stuck that timetable like exactly 4 weeks and he was back and back into the fire. And, yeah, I don't think he's all the way right now. Obviously Jake Fruitmorgan's just been a walking injury since he got here, basically, or at least that's the way that it seems. And I don't mean any offense by that. It's just that he's always seemed to have, you know, kind of something going on that's prevented him from being 100%.
Yeah, and they're going to need all three of them going forward.
Sure.
So I'm hoping that, you know, this week Malin kind of got a double bye because of the extra time. I'm hoping he comes back and is right, because he was a guy that Coach Rule talked a ton about coming into the year as a guy that – they feel extremely confident about playing left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been kind of discouraging to see him have this senior year that he's been having. And I really hope for him that it you know, gets better moving forward, and they could really use him, and especially this week against the kind of defensive line that they're going to be facing.
Anything else on Oak State or anything like that?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, just the simple thought that of, you know, homecoming, Baylor just needs to come out and play really well. They're facing a team that is a good team, and they're not just going to lay down and let, you know, Baylor win this game, and they're going to present some challenges. And so it'll be interesting to see if Baylor makes adjustments from last week's game against West Virginia and gets to come home and maybe get a win in the friendly confines of McLean Stadium.
I know you've put up a lot of recruiting notes, so we can or cannot right here. We can just jump in the mailbag, or you can throw a couple recruiting notes if you want to, because we're going pretty long already. But anybody that wants recruiting info, unless you got something you just want to throw out there right now,
well,
it's up on the board.
Let's talk a little bit about Will Nixon.
Okay.
Just a little bit, because local kid.
Right.
Of course, and he, you know, 2020,
uh-huh,
kind of a slot and running back type prospect. He is Coach Jeff Nixon's son, who's the offensive coordinator here at Baylor and running backs coach. And I know you get to see him pretty much every single week. What have you seen from him based on the games you've been to?
Well, I said some of this on the board, but immediately what jumped out to me about him before I even knew he was Jeff Nixon's son, before I really knew anything about him, was just, oh, he looks like a player. He just, the body type, the height. He's not like exceptionally tall, but he's, you know, 6 foot-ish. I mean, that's exactly what you're looking for. You know, filled out, not all the way to where he will be eventually, but has a great frame to work off of and is already pretty – he's more solid than a lot of high school kids, you know. I remember Pooh Strickland, even still, he's like 4 years deep at Baylor and is still not all the way developed physically. But Will's got, you know, good size. He's only going to get bigger and stronger and faster. He's got good speed. He's got – you can tell that he's a coach's son in some ways just by kind of his moves. And he just, you know, there's that polished – factor to him that not everybody has, right? It's like some of that's natural for a lot of guys, but you can also tell he's put in a lot of work at being a football player and playing the running back position. And since he's really played a whole lot of slot this year, also playing the slot as well. Like, he's going to have the technique right. He's going to do the small things right. He's not going to be a guy that's, you know, got any loose ends, basically. So he's a sharp football player. He has not taken the majority of carries at midway at the running back spot, which is where he was mostly playing early in the year, because James Fulbright, their senior, who's not big enough to get a lot of D1 offers, unfortunately, because, man, he is a brute force back there. And him and Mordecai last year was lethal in that backfield. But this year, you know, Fulbright's getting a ton of carries. Last week he got dinged up early, and with Temple coming up, they decided to go ahead and just sit him down because he like kind of dinged up his hip. So that game was already in control, and they obviously want him healthy for Temple to have a shot of beating the Wildcats. So Will and their other backup running back got opportunities, mostly the other backup running back, because Will has now sort of just become one of their slot receivers, and he's made some good catches. I can't think of really any occasion where he's, you know, made a disappointing drop or anything again along those lines. He's just a good, fundamentally sound, good technique football player with good size. And I think really next year is going to be a year where you see him put up some big numbers. For one, this year he's put up okay numbers, but he's playing a different position in a way. He's just a junior. Their quarterback play is not good. I've well documented that. Every receiver on that team should probably have a couple extra 100 yards than they do right now and a couple TDs more than they do right now. But Will's been a nice little weapon for him as the quarterback has started to get a little bit more comfortable and has made some plays. And he's explosive. He's not extremely fast, but he's got good enough speed. So he's good in every area. Like, he checks all the boxes, and I think he's only going to get better at receiver as they continue along and this quarterback play continues to continue on along for how long? I mean, maybe 3 more weeks? Maybe that's it. I don't know. But next year, with Fulbright gone, he's going to be probably the dude at running back. And in that offense, where they like to toss the pig a lot, they really love to run the football, as evidenced by Fulbright's numbers. Will, once he puts some weight on and he gets that job, we'll have some really, really big opportunities to put up some big plays next year.
Yeah, and I kind of see him when he does come to Baylor, based off the film I've seen, that, you know, kind of that Josh Fleeks mold, that kind of role.
But bigger.
He's bigger than
More
Fleeks.
Filled out, I'm saying. Yeah.
And kind of Gavin Holmes' role as well. They're pretty similar in height and weight. Well, hopefully soon he'll get to that weight. I know Gavin's probably right at 200 right now, but... I'm really excited. I'm actually going to the game today, so I'm going to get to see Midway versus Temple. So that'll
be a big
be,
one.
Mm-hmm, interesting to see Will Nixon take on TJ Franklin.
Yep.
Kind of for the district championship.
Yeah, kind of.
De facto, kind
of. Sort of, kind of. I really made the mistake and I've been so focused in on this game that they both still have another game to play. I just feel like with Midway, Belton's quarterback's out for the year. And that's who Midway ends with at home. So if they beat Temple, I feel like there's no way they're losing to Belton, especially with Connor Carruthers injured. But Temple then has to go play Coppers Cove, which I don't even know where that game is. They'd be the favorites. But Cove can be a dangerous team because they have some really good athletes. They have an interesting offensive system as well that's different than everybody else in the district. So there is always that chance that Temple could win and then get too high and then go lose to Cove, and then you've got a whole mess on your hands. But de facto district championship, yes, this is the game to see who's probably going to be the big dog in this district. And the loser has to worry about then facing a Buzzsaw Longview team in Longview, most likely in the playoffs. So yeah, you're trying to both avoid that. And Temple being up at 6A this year, they've been cruising through the 5A playoffs, and I can see them going a few rounds deep. But 6A is a different ball game, and they're not a supremely deep team numbers wise. They're a pretty thin roster, not on talent but on numbers. And so you get into the big boy schools, and that does start to make a difference for you. They both want to avoid Longview, and both want to win district. And Midway's owned them as of late. They've been really good games, but this is in Temple, so it should be a lot of fun tonight.
Yeah, I'm excited to go to that one. And so one more kind of big note from the week was...
But I like the Will offer. When I first saw him, I thought that could be a guy that Baylor offers one day, and it had nothing to do with his father. I just looked. It was his look and his polished nature. And again, next year, watch out for him to really have a big year.
Yeah, definitely excited to see him in person for the first time this year. The other big news, Landon Peterson out of Permian, decommitted from Baylor. Kind of basically what I've heard on it is that, you know, Baylor offered this Isaiah Hookfin kid from Dulles High School, and Hookfin's gotten offers from Auburn and Mississippi State since getting that Baylor offer. So
visiting Texas this weekend.
Yeah, so he's blown up a little bit, and that's a good offer. I mean, that Hookfin kid is a really good player, but from what I can tell is I think Landon kind of didn't like the fact that Baylor already has Elijah Ellis. They're going after Brant Banks. Now they're going after another tackle. And so it seems like the numbers were kind of where he kind of got turned off a little bit from Baylor.
Has he watched this offensive line?
I know.
I mean,
Baylor needs
screw
them.
The numbers.
Baylor needs offensive linemen. They got to take 3 or 4
right.
This class. Like, it's just the simple reality of it. And the thing is, they love taking tackles, and they don't care if they're going to end up a tackle because they'll move them to guard. But they like having, you know, these 6'5", long, tall guards, even, not just tackles. And so, yeah, if they do take 4, 2 will probably slide to guard, and 2 will probably be tackle. And there's going to be playing time. I think we've seen that eventually there will be playing time.
And so, this is not a team that seems to – even before we realized how bad the O-line was, they were still always of the mind of rotating guys everywhere. So, you might have like your starting five, which would be great if one day they could actually have a starting five that you rely on mostly, but you're still going to see time. Like, you're not just going to ride the pine if you're not a starter on the O-line for this roster. You're just not, and for what they do. So, you know, whatever. I mean, that's recruiting, and best of luck to him, and you just hope they hold on to Matt Jones now, because you got Peyton Powell going to Texas, you got Lanny Peterson going to Tech or to wherever he ends up going, and Matt Jones is your commit out of Permian at the moment.
Yeah, and he seems to be still very solid. If Texas offers him and Landon, that could make things a little interesting, but I think he's pretty solid.
Do they ever run out of scholarships?
I know. How do they offer everyone? But yeah, it's kind of a bummer. But on the flip side, I don't think Landon Peterson is, you know, irreplaceable. You know, impossible.
He's not Connor Galvin.
No, he's not. But here's the thing. I don't know how any freshman recruit couldn't be like, wow, they're starting a three-star freshman at tackle. That should give guys going, oh, wow, if I go in and compete, I could start as a freshman.
You'd think so, but who knows?
Yeah.
You know, what's
recruiting.
It's recruiting. Who the heck knows? Let's get into some mailbag questions now. We'll roll on through these, and we do appreciate those of you who posted questions this week. Bear on Glade, do you have access to yards after catch statistics in the last 3 to 4 games? I can only think of one play where Baylor had a receiver catch the ball and have room to run, hurt on a crossing route early against Texas. Just seems every time we make a catch, our guys are covered and immediately go down or have to bull their way for an extra 3 to 4 yards at most. We keep hearing that opposing defenses are taking away the deep ball, but all the underneath routes are covered too. How can these two things happen at the same time without leaving some pretty gaping holes in the defense?
Well, a big
first of all, don't have those statistics. So sorry, but I looked everywhere, could not find the statistics.
I don't have those statistics either. The only other one that I wanted to mention, since you did, you know, say you don't remember very many, was Denzel Mims had a big catch against Texas late in that game across the middle of the field and caught it, I believe, at the 30 and took it all the way down to the 5. So he got a good 25 yards after catch. But other than that, yeah, there has not been much room to run after catch at all.
The fact that that's just pops in your head and nothing else does, it says it all. There's, you know, it's been a very, very void year when it comes to explosive plays. No doubt about it.
Exactly. And Platt dropped one in that West Virginia game that would have been probably 15 more yards and
a
touchdown.
Could have at least just gotten the ball rolling. Yeah. I mean, he has been so just... And I mean, no disrespect to Chris, but he's been so forgettable this year. I mean, it was such a big deal that he was coming back, and because Charlie doesn't have the arm strength, or because the O-line can't block long enough for McClendon or Charlie, or because receivers just can't catch the football, like, there is no deep presence with Platt. And then he's got a wide. I mean, that is the easiest touchdown he could ever have in a game where they have to have something go their way, and just drops it, and it's just... It's been that kind of a year for him. I hate it. I hate it for him, but I don't know what the deal is with that. That's just, you'd think that he'd be the yak guy, and he was last year until he got hurt, but they don't have really any of that this year. And you're right about guys just getting tripped up. I mean, this team does seem to get just tripped up by the slightest just grazing of the hand across the ankles, more so than any other team. They don't break a lot of tackles. They go down upon contact, and that goes for everybody other than Hurd when he's a running back, quite frankly. I don't know how you solve that or cure that. I mean, it's not conditioning and physical development any longer either. It's just that they just don't break tackles. It's insane to me. It's very frustrating, too, especially when, like, Ebner last year had a couple of games where he could have big, long touchdowns, but gets brought down one-on-one. It's just it's maddening, really.
Yeah, it is, and it's tough to watch. And we knew that was something that they were trying to improve coming into this year, but it hasn't really happened. I do have 1 yards after the catch stat just because it was posted, but Jalen Hurd has 224 of his 660 yards after catch. So that's a pretty good number.
I'll take that.
For how many yards. So he has found some success in that category. Now, as far as what defenses are doing, so the first thing is, and everyone keeps talking about Charlie's arm strength, and that's definitely a part of it. The other part about it is the offensive line's giving them no time to throw the ball deep. So to even take those shots when they are there is very tough because the pressure's getting there so quick that the quarterback's eyes are coming down because they have to. They got to run, get out of there. As far as the routes underneath being covered, you know, I've watched, you know, some of the game. I think that's a function of not being able to run the ball, and that's the same thing with the deep pass.
Yep.
I mean, if you can't run the ball, you're not softening the linebackers at all.
A lot of cause and effect going
on.
Yeah,
a whole lot. And if you can't run the ball, yeah, of course the deep ball is going to be hard to come by, and the short routes, because the defense isn't afraid at all. So they can just cover their guy, don't even worry about the run game, and that's how they can do both at the same time, because when you become predictable on offense, it's very easy to cover you.
Thank you, Bear on Glade, for that. I'll take this one. You take the next couple. Ateneo, hopefully I'm saying that right, 24. With Charlie's limited arm strength, if McClendon gets a start against Oklahoma State, will his arm strength help us out and open up the offense a bit more? We took multiple shots against ACU because McClendon had the arm strength, but with Charlie at quarterback, our passing game can be very predictable at times.
I mean, I mentioned this earlier. I like his arm strength, and yeah, it could open it up, maybe hit on a big play or two, but I'm in the game of more chain-moving offense when you have an offensive line like this. I just don't know how much time you're going to get to make those deep throws down the field, but I could be wrong. He's definitely going to give them more of a shot to stretch the field, and maybe it does open up some plays for Chris Platt or for Denzel. You know, it definitely is possible.
They can hit more deep, but again, does he have the time to sit back and launch it like he wants to? So thank you, Ateneo.
Golden Green, do you expect Gavin Holmes to have as big an impact on the offense if McClendon gets the start? Seems like he was Charlie's favorite target before the ACL. And then what are both your thoughts on the Sailor Bear helmets, assuming I don't jinx it?
Yeah, on Sailor Bear, I'll just say I'm indifferent to it. I mean, if it looks cool, then I don't care what the logo is. I just, you know, if it's like white, green, white, I think that would look really cool. But I've never been... It doesn't mean anything to me. So I'm different there from a lot of Baylor fans. And, I mean, again, it's just kind of whatever. If it looks cool, great.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
I
hope it looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a good idea. Like I said, mixing it up on homecoming, I think, is something fun for the fans. And, yeah, I'm definitely cool with it. What do you think about Gavin with McClendon instead of Charlie?
I think he'd obviously be better off with Charlie just because of that relationship. And he has been practicing for the last 6 weeks. I mean, he's been practicing all the way. You know, they brought him along a little bit slowly at first. I think it was good to be cautionary and not throw him back into the fire too early. But, yeah, I think if he shows he can be trusted to catch the football and move the chains, then yeah, he can absolutely have a great relationship with Jalen McClendon. You know, obviously doesn't have probably that same level of or that vibe as he has with Charlie. But, yeah, I think he can have as big of an impact because, quite frankly, I think they're screaming for a receiver to have a consistent impact. And although Mims answers the bell from time to time and Jalen Hurd answers the bell from time to time and others, like, come up with a sporadic couple of catches a game here and there, they're in desperate need of somebody who's just going to go in there with this bulldog attitude, make catches, make plays after the catch, and do it consistently. So if he can prove to be that guy for McClendon, then I think Jalen will look his way a lot.
Yeah, I think he'll impact the offense just fine because, like I said, they utilized him in so many different ways last year. And so if they're able to get more first downs and thus have more plays to be able to run, then, yeah, I think he could, you know. And they're going to try to limit him a little bit, but I could see him getting a couple sweep carries and maybe, you know, some passes across the middle. And I'd love to see it. You know, it's great to have Gavin back, that's for sure. So thanks for the question, Golden Green. Alpha Needle, is Connor Galvin playing – left tackle because he is the best option or because Malin and Fruh have been hurt?
They've been hurt and they've been banged up. And, you know, Fruh Morgan's still been out there. It's just I don't think he's established himself as trustworthy enough to be the starting left tackle. Trustworthy meaning, has he proven that, like, he owns that spot? Has he proven that he can be healthy enough to command that spot? Or is he better off somewhere else on the offensive line, like the right tackle spot? I think it's about fit. It's about what they've shown, and Malin is clearly dinged up. So I think they still want Fruh Morgan out there, so you're seeing him on the opposite side rather than at left tackle. But, yeah, there's a variety of reasons, I guess, is what I'm saying. Injury somewhat, but also just, hey, if he's going to be the guy for the future moving forward at left tackle, which is certainly what they recruited him as, it seemed like last year, then – you also believe Fruh Morgan's not ready to command that left tackle spot. trot him out there, you know, and still have Fru Morgan out there at the same time.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, Fru Morgan and Galvin are probably going to be the starting group last year. So, you know, you might as well get him right now. Yeah, next year. So, might as well get him ready right now. And, yeah, Malin and Fru clearly have not been 100%.
I don't think he can be trusted to be the left tackle with his injury history. I think that's got to be a mainstay. And he has not been that so far.
It's been tough to watch. He also put, it appears recruiting is getting impacted by our performance on the field. With all the recruits coming in on Saturday, what impact does recruiting take if we lay an egg?
I kind of take objection to your first part of that, and I'm not the recruiting guy here, but Landon Peterson decommitted, and other than that, I don't really see anything that would give me cause for concern. If you're meaning like a King Daroo deciding to go to Purdue, well, I mean, that would have probably happened whether or not they were 8-0 right now. So I think what you're seeing is that they did so much so early on that there hasn't been nearly as much activity because the majority of the class has already been intact. And so they weren't going to go on a run of like 10 commits during this time period anyways. But, I mean, decommits are still happening to teams that are winning right now. So, I mean, I don't really agree with that. Could it affect it further? Of course. But it also seems like a lot of these guys are all in. I mean, you know, if Jalen Ellis goes out of the All-American game and commits to Baylor, I don't think that's, you know, regardless of what they end up doing the rest of the year, I think that's, you know, a pretty good impact on your recruiting class. But, you know, I don't know. I just don't feel like there's been that sort of negative influence on this class right now.
No, and I mean, I've been following it, and you're exactly right. It has not affected it at all. I mean, their class has been full, so yeah, it's been a little bit more difficult to, you know, maybe get commitments, but they haven't really been pressing the issue until recently, till the bye week, and a lot of out-of-state offers that really you're not really expecting a commitment, you know, from all those offers. You may get one, maybe two, but yeah, I haven't seen really a negative impact. And the other thing I'll say, if you're looking at King Daroo or Landon Peterson, the consistent theme,
Peyton Powell or whatever, like, you're gonna miss on guys.
You are, but those two in particular, the reason they aren't coming to Baylor is because the class is good. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the basis of it. I mean, King, you know, with Quaylen already coming, and then Landon with the offensive line guys that Baylor's bringing in, I just don't think it's much of, oh, Baylor's not playing well, or they're not doing, you know, what I want to see on the field. I think it's more just fit, and that happens in recruiting, and I'm not worried about it at all. And as far as all the recruits coming in on Saturday, there's not going to be a ton. There'll be some, but the big recruiting weekend is going to be the TCU game.
Okay. Appreciate it, Alpha Neil. Nate Smith, hey guys, two questions. One, hopefully Charlie trots out the opening series Saturday. However, I'm concerned he may not be a go. If Jalen's the guy, do you see him overall as a net positive or negative to the offense compared to Charlie? I can see his big arm allowing for Platt or Mims to give our offense an element it's been missing. Conversely, he's not nearly as mobile as Charlie, and with our O-line, that can be a problem. Thoughts? I mean, we've kind of gone over this a bit. I would rather have a healthy Charlie Brewer out there, no doubt. But do I see him as a big negative? It all depends on what the O-line can do. Because if they can give him some time, I think you could see this offense start to fly a little bit like it's capable of doing, and like it hasn't really in a couple of weeks. But I would say, I don't even want to call it a negative, really. I mean, I guess it would be from the standpoint, is it good as it could be? No. But is it a negative? I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't want to call it a negative, but I would say, and I've said it, I think Charlie would give them a little bit of a better shot at winning this game. That's just my opinion on it.
So a negative, so I guess.
It's a little bit of a negative, but yeah, I don't think that it's going to be. I just really don't know. I really don't know. I haven't seen Jalen play enough to really get a vibe on how he will do in a meaningful starting role like this in a big game. So I guess it's to be determined, but I would rather have Charlie starting if I had the choice.
Sure. Number two, seeing Landon Peterson decommit this week, Jalen Ellis essentially doing the same with his comments this week. It's not true, by the way. He would not commit to Baylor today when asked. Where did he say that? Did he say that?
No.
Okay. What's your overall level of concern? My gut says simply part of recruiting was interesting in both your perspectives on if this concerns you in any way. Thanks, guys. Well, thank you, Nate Smith. We do appreciate the questions. Jalen has told people, and I told you this like months ago off the podcast, and I even said this one podcast when we were talking about it. I was like, I consider him decommitted. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was like 2 months ago, because if he's not outright like saying I'm committed or is dodging the question, but I mean, this might all just be some brilliant scheme for all we know. This could be like a big All-American game commit payoff. Now, don't everybody just be convinced that'll happen because, again, it is recruiting. But I don't think he's in any way negatively affecting Baylor by any of his actions, at least the ones that I've seen. Now, I don't follow it as closely as you do, but him certainly not saying, I'm a Baylor commit and I'm going to be a Baylor commit. I think he's a lot smarter than maybe we're giving him credit for.
Yeah, in the quote, it was not that he would not commit to Baylor today. It was that he would not sign today. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is two totally different things, because he's basically saying he's not ready to sign yet, which is indicative by him waiting till January 5th
right.
to commit and waiting till the second signing period. So I wouldn't read too much into that. And if you read it as he wouldn't commit today, that's just false because he's still committed. He hasn't publicly announced that he's decommitted. So until that point, he's still a Baylor commit. And, you know, we've kind of had a good read on this. And for now, I think he's going to get up there January 5th at the All-American game, and he's going to pick Baylor. And that's just my gut read on it. And that's how we've seen it for this whole time. And he's been committed since, what, May of 2017,
yep.
2016, something like that. And so
long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. And Baylor was his first offer, and he's got a great relationship with Sean Bell. So I would not read into what he's doing right now too much. I think it's just recruiting and he's enjoying it.
Up next.
I'll get the next one. SA Baylor fan, 8 games into this season, what's your overall assessment of this team's performance compared to that of 2017 Bears?
I'd much rather follow this team than last year's team. That's my assessment on it. I think they're better in pretty much every way, other than you could go individually, like, are they better without Taylor Young than with Taylor Young? No, obviously not. But I think that the injury situation is a lot better than it was last year. I think the O-line is about the same, and that's disappointing. Quite frankly, maybe a little bit better, but really it hadn't made that much of a difference, quite frankly. But I think the mindset's better. I know that's not what people want to hear necessarily, but to me, they're a better team. Are they good? No. But they're better than they were last year. I mean, I think that's, to me, that's pretty clear. Are they good enough to go out and beat Texas or beat Oklahoma or beat Iowa State or beat any of these teams right now? No, not yet. They're not. But, you know, that's – I don't want to – the process, but, I mean, that really is kind of part of it. It's – we feel like we should see them beating the teams they're supposed to beat, like, which in our minds are probably a bit unfair. Like, oh, they should beat Oklahoma State. Well, should they really by this point? We should see this. We should see that. But we also don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Does that guarantee that it's eventually going to work out and blossom the way that everybody wants it to? No, not necessarily, because it happens all the time with every program in the country. Texas has taken 10 years to be consistent again, you know? So there's no guarantees in this thing, but I don't think there's any question. While there are some areas that are still very similar and a little too eerily similar, they are better overall than they were last year.
Yeah, there are a ton of areas that are eerily similar, and that's tough to see, but it's still better than last year.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
This team lost to Liberty and UTSA last year, and this year people can say, oh, they gave up points to, you know, Abilene Christian and UTSA, but they beat them both by 3 scores. They did what they were supposed to do in those games, and that right there is already a huge difference from last year. But as far as the team as a whole, they're definitely better. I mean, looking at the stats, they're averaging 50 more yards, a whole touchdown more per game, which is huge. I mean, they were about 100th in scoring offense last year, and now they're up to a little over 31 points a game as opposed to 24 a year ago. So definitely an upgrade on offense. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about that. I think the offensive line has gotten significantly better, I would say.
I'll say assessment-wise, though, they have to, like,
still got
by next year, you better be able to run the football. Like, yeah. It's not inexcusable yet, but if they can't run the football consistently the next year, like regularly pick up a 5-yard carry, then that's going to be really, really concerning, because you can't win without being able to run the football. So that's not all that different. And you're not going to have Jalen Hurd next year to save your backside on, you know, short yardage situations. Defensively, still far, far, far too many mistakes, and that's been frustrating to see. So, you know, that does come with freshman safeties playing probably way more than they should be playing. I'm not excusing it, though, whatsoever. That defense has got to get better. They've got a month to do so. It's not nearly as good as it should be if you're looking at coming off of last year, nor is that offensive line. But I think in a lot of other areas, it's better off.
I agree with that. So thanks for the question, SA Baylor fan. Grant Lindstetter, love the podcast. I look forward to it every week. First time dropping a question in the mailbag. Well, keep asking. You know, we enjoy every question that we get asked, so we hope you ask some more questions in the future. But your first question, we seem to not be able to have big passing plays over the top of defenses. Is this because of what opposing defenses are doing in terms of scheme, or is it more of personnel issues such as our offensive line not giving Charlie enough time to let the routes develop, or Charlie's lack of a big arm to drive the ball down the field?
I think rewind about 15, 20 minutes on the podcast, or if you've been listening through, you've heard us talk about this.
Yeah, exactly. We've just talked
about the offensive line. No disrespect, Grant, by the way. Yeah, we just kind of already talked about that, I think.
Your second question, do we know if this staff is looking at any junior college offensive linemen that could come in and immediately help our struggling O-line instead of developing freshman offensive linemen, which can take a couple years? Thanks again. Love the podcast. You both do amazing work. Well, we really appreciate that. Now, as far as your question goes.
Yeah, definitely ask some more questions in the future.
Yeah.
We're all for that.
JUCO offensive linemen. So they haven't really offered any as of right now. I think that the JUCO offers for offensive linemen will come as the season progresses. I think they may try to get one. I do. I have kind of a hunch that they may try to get one. The problem is that it's hard to get any elite one. It just can sometimes be difficult. I know they got Giancarlo this year, but
well, it's not like he came in and just made an instant impact. So it's not a guarantee with those guys either.
So you got to be able to find the right one, and that's kind of where they're at right now. And they would rather build them up as freshmen to build them into exactly what they want, as opposed to just kind of bringing in a stalwart. And so. I have a hunch they'll look for a few, maybe get one, but like I said, it's got to be the right guy.
Yeah, they're pretty picky about the JUCOs, and again, it seems like the quick fix, but, you know, Valentine was a big deal, and he's been okay, but he hasn't been the major force that you thought the major change that you thought you might see with this offensive line. And finally, Big SA Bear, what's the possibility of seeing Gary Bohannon or Craig Williams in the homecoming game? Have you heard anything from your sources this might happen? It would be nice to have a bone thrown BU fans' way, considering the Big 12 sanctions and everything else going on. Also, to give us a glimpse of the future and see what the process is reaping. Of course, only if it will help us win. I don't see why I wouldn't. Love the podcast. Great job. Well, thanks, Big SA Bear. I don't think they're ever going to play guys to throw fans a bone. They can't ever think that way, because fans would have like the backup quarterback starting every week, and then once he got the start, they want the other guy to be the quarterback again. I mean, that's just kind of fan nature. But you don't play Gary Bohannon to satisfy the fan base because they've been through a lot. Like, that's just that's not ever going to happen. And the coaching staff that ever does that needs to be fired immediately. But Craig Williams, we talked about him earlier, as well as Gary, and maybe you see Gary, but, I mean, I think you're thinking, like, does he go run a series out there? I don't think we're seeing that, especially not if Charlie's healthy. And I don't know how much really we'll see of Gary this week in particular anyways. And with Squirrel, I don't think this is the week to use him. I just don't. I think you're much better served with him playing Tech and TCU, and especially because those might have – those, as much as this may be a must-win, those will be must-wins. If you don't win the next 2 weeks, you're not winning next week. I'm just saying it right now. So save him for those last two when you have to really pull out all of your big guns.
I agree. I would wait on Squirrel. I probably wouldn't play him this week. You know, I'll just make a prediction. I think Gary Bohannon runs at least one play in this game. I don't think it will be...
But it's not going to be like... I think he's looting like playing. I don't think it's going to be like that.
No, I think he may come in for a play or two if it's something Baylor sees on the defensive side that they think they could take advantage of. He'll come in and maybe make a throw or maybe a run or something, but...
He's going to throw for 352 yards.
There we go. Watch. Yeah. Now that's a bold prediction right there.
And four TDs.
But thanks for the question. You want to move on to a little bit of Big 12 pick 'em?
Yeah, let's go ahead and knock this out.
All right, so the first game of the weekend, Iowa State travels to Lawrence, Kansas.
Uh-oh.
A place that has not been friendly to opponents this year as they knocked off the TCU Horned Frogs for their first Big 12 win in the last 2 years.
Does Matt Campbell have a towel girl on the sidelines?
I don't know why.
Well, I'm just thinking. It kind of depends on what my answer is going to be here. If he does, then there's a chance. If he doesn't, then I feel like, yeah, this is an Iowa State win all the way. This is not even going to be a close game at all. This is not even going to be a – if it's a close game, that would be shocking to me because I feel like Brock Purdy is going to be done by halftime, and I don't know how Kansas is scoring against – I mean, Puka this, Puka that, whatever – but that Iowa State defense is a different animal. And TCU, you know, they gave up a lot of plays to Puka last week, but now that's all Iowa State's been watching all week is what Puka did last week against TCU. So I feel like they're going to be very well prepared.
Yeah, I don't think Kansas is as bad as they have been in years past. And
they're not as bad as they have been. They're not at rock bottom.
And I don't think Iowa State, I know they did against Tech, but Tech speeds up the game.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas doesn't do that. Kansas does try to run it a little bit and tries to waste a little bit of time. I think they'll hang around. They've hung around against virtually everyone they've played with for the most part. I mean, they're still losing by 20.
Right.
But they hang around. I think Iowa State will win this something like 34-14.
That's fair. Yeah, they'll win by 3 touchdowns at least.
Yeah. West Virginia, who just came off a big win over the Baylor Bears on Thursday. They're going to take on Texas in Austin, who's coming off the big loss to Oklahoma State on the road. What's your vibe on this one?
Well, West Virginia's ranked highly, right? Then Texas will win this game because that's what Tom Herman does. And then everybody will start to feel good again, and they'll rise up the playoff rankings. But Longhorns win by, 7 to 10 points. And get back and stay in the mix in the Big 12. I mean, I would love to be able to say that Will Grier goes and has a phenomenal day, especially because he didn't play against him last year. Got knocked out early in that game, right?
Yeah. No, he didn't play because he broke his hand.
So yeah, he didn't play
before,
at all. Yeah. So he gets a shot at Texas now. But funny things happen in Austin, as we all know. Texas coming off that loss, I feel like there's no way West Virginia matches their energy from last Thursday. Just not going to happen. So. Doesn't mean they won't have energy. They're just not going to be nearly as tuned up and ready to play as they were against Baylor, where it's blowing the doors off early on. And UT's got a lot to prove after last week, especially their defensive secondary, where they got embarrassed early on in that Oklahoma State game and really lost the game for them, quite frankly.
Yeah, I'm taking West Virginia. The biggest reason I'm taking them, first of all, I picked them to play OU in the Big 12 championship, mm-hmm. So kind of sticking with that theme, I do think West Virginia is a very good team. I think they're a better team than Texas, personally, and I don't think they'll come in down. They won't play up to the level they played at against Baylor, but I think they'll be kind of more neutral. I'm curious if Texas really plays extremely well or if they kind of just stick in this lull it seems like they've kind of been in since the OU game. And I think West Virginia beats them. Not by a lot, but I think they'll beat them by 10, maybe something like 31-21.
Fair enough.
What I'm going
could
with.
Definitely see it going either way. Tom Herman usually thrives in these games. I mean, I know it's
he
a storyline that we're going to all be nauseated by, or if we're not already, but especially throughout his career, but it's true. I mean, there's a reason why it's being talked about so much and has been.
Absolutely. Kansas State travels to face the last-ranked team in the Big 12. The TCU Horned Frogs in Fort Worth.
Wait, isn't Kansas the last ranked team in the Big 12?
No, because Kansas beat TCU.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Oh, I
yeah.
missed that.
So,
I'm sorry.
Two of the lower teams in the Big 12, though, Kansas State, TCU. Kansas State got absolutely destroyed by Oklahoma in Norman. TCU, of course, coming off the loss to Kansas. Where are you at on this one?
Man, I have no idea. I really don't. Like, everything tells me that TCU has got to bounce back. So I'm going to go TCU here because if they don't bounce back this week, then my gosh. It's in Fort Worth, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go TCU, but I don't think they're going to just blow the doors off of K-State. I think it'll be, 7-14 point win, something along relatively low-scoring game. But, I think Bill Snyder's time's coming to an end for real this time, and this may be the one of the final daggers in that. And I think even if they were to go win this game, that's still happening anyways. But, yeah, TCU's I just have to believe they've practiced well this week and will bounce back in a big way.
I think it just gets worse.
Okay, I hope you're right.
I really do. I think that Kansas State is – I think, you know, even though Snyder is not a great year, I think they're still very well coached, and I think they have more talent than TCU, quite frankly. And I don't think Michael Collins is going to be able to do much against this Kansas State defense. They're going to be able to get pass rush. They're going to be able to get pressure. And I don't think these receivers are going to run open like they did a couple times against Kansas, because K-State's frankly a better team than Kansas. And so, and then on the flip side, we'll see if TCU has a game plan for Alex Barnes, but they sure didn't for Puka Williams. So I got Kansas State winning this game. It will be close, but I think they're going to end up winning at something like 24-17 or 24-20.
Okay.
Oklahoma travels for a night game after beating Kansas State this past week. They're going to Lubbock, to Texas Tech, a place that has been very unfavorable to road teams when it's a nighttime game.
Right.
What do you think?
I think Oklahoma wins this game. I think it's going to be extremely difficult, at least for the majority of this game. I can see them separating late, but it's going to be a shootout. I think both teams are going to put up points, and we'll see how much better Oklahoma's defense really has become under Ruffin McNeil in the last couple of weeks, because I think they've faced a couple of teams where it's been easy to look like you're a little bit better, and they've had a little bit of change in their attitude. I will say that. I mean, they do look a little bit different, hitting a little bit harder. But I'm still going to take Oklahoma, because I think if you get in a battle of offenses, while Kingsbury is not somebody you want to duel with, I think Lincoln Riley is a shade, just not much, but I'll take Lincoln Riley in that duel, and I'll take Oklahoma's defense overall versus Texas Tech's overall. And yes, environment will play a factor. That's why I think it'll be a close game until late. But I think Oklahoma's the better team, so I'm going to go with the Sooners.
I think it will be a shootout, but one team will be scoring a little bit more than the other, and I think that will be Oklahoma. I got Oklahoma winning this game something like, you know, 51-37. I think it's going to be very high scoring and very entertaining. I just think Oklahoma's just better. I think they got one more talent, and that's kind of where I'm going with that.
They got a lot more talent. Yeah. I mean, overall, a lot more talent. But, Trey Sermon last week had a pretty nice game. They seem to have kind of gone back to their roots a little bit there after, you know, man, it'd be interesting to see. Like, that Rodney Anderson injury, I think, hurt them a lot. And even then, I mean, they lost to Texas, and that's it so far. So I think they're better pretty much across the board than Texas Tech in every area. The only thing that puts this in doubt for me is that, you know, Tech is a team that can hang around with anybody because of what they do on offense, and they create a lot of turnovers. How sharp is Kyler in this game, especially in that environment? That's really like the kind of wild card in this thing, and it gives me any sort of pause, but I'll still go OU.
Yeah, and they struggled stopping a running quarterback with Brock Purdy a little bit last week, so I can see Murray being able to do some things with his legs. One thing I want to mention about Tech, that receiver they have is phenomenal. Wesley.
Yeah, Antoine Wesley.
That guy is
some ridiculous
really
catch every week.
Yeah, and I had no idea he went to Cibolo Steel.
Yeah.
I had no idea that he went there, but they've developed him really nicely. He might be the best receiver in the Big 12. He's
could
up
be
there. So now, game of the week. Homecoming.
Hollywood Brown. But
oh, Hollywood. Okay. Yeah. Well, CD's been playing really well.
CD Lamb's looked really good.
Too, so.
Yeah.
Very interesting. But game of the week, McLean Stadium. It's homecoming in Waco. Oklahoma State travels to Baylor after beating Texas at home in Stillwater. Baylor, of course, coming off the drubbing at West Virginia. It will be homecoming here. What do you think about this one?
It's funny. I haven't really given the actual result in my head too much thought. I mean, I haven't. But I'm going to pick Oklahoma State. And I know it's going to be disappointing if everybody would like to hear Baylor here, but I just have to see them prove it, man. I have to see them prove that they can win a game like this. They did against K-State, but it's been a much different story the last few weeks since that game occurred. And I worry about Oklahoma State's defense, especially if Charlie Brewer's not playing and Jalen McLennan's the dude, as far as what they're really going to be able to do offensively. And especially with their explosiveness on offense, I worry about the fact this defense just still cannot find a way to not give up at least 2 to 3 to 4 to 10, like West Virginia, big plays a game. And I think kind of like where the weaknesses are for Baylor are the strengths for Oklahoma State, and I don't feel like if you flip-flop that, that really rings true. So I'm going to go with Oklahoma State in this game by 10 to 14. You know, that's, again, don't trust me on scores. It's like our pick'em thing. I'm not good about the final score thing, nor may you argue that I'm good about the actual outcome itself either, but I'm going to go with Oklahoma State because I need to see it from this Baylor team, and one team's riding a hot hand. Now, that hot hand may get them burned because they're riding a little too high still from last week, and I know that they don't bode well necessarily in Waco, but you know, I couldn't get a good read on this Baylor team this week, so that's given me a lot of pause, and I'm going to go with the Cowboys.
I think Oklahoma State only playing in their third road game of the entire season and coming off of a, you know, really emotional one.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I think they come in here and are kind of not playing very well is what I think. I don't think they're going to come in here and really set the world on fire. I think Baylor will jump on them a little bit early, and then Oklahoma State will start, you know, clawing their way back little by little. But if Charlie Brewer does play, I think Baylor wins this game. And okay. I think they win it 34-31. That's the score I'm going with. I could easily see them getting blown out in this game. I could easily see them hanging around and losing this game. But I just have this feeling that Oklahoma State is not the same team when they go away from Stillwater.
They're like West Virginia, you mean?
Yeah, very similar in that regard, and especially this year. I don't trust Cornelius to really set the world on fire, and I think Baylor finds a way to win this game, and that would probably be, you could argue, actually you couldn't argue, it would be the biggest win for Matt Rhule in
absolutely.
His time at Baylor.
Yeah, no, it's not even a question. It would absolutely be, and that would give you needing just one win. Of course you'd want more, but just one win in your final three, and would make your road trip to Ames a lot more pleasant. And would kind of, you know, alleviate some of the pressure maybe the team's feeling, especially as you get to less and less games the rest of the way. So hopefully I'm wrong. I really hope that I am, but I got to see it from this team, man, to gain that confidence back to pick them in a game like this. I had it early on in the year, but they've lost it with the last couple of results. So, you know, I'm going to go with the Cowboys until proven. Well, I'm going to go with the Cowboys, and we'll just see what happens. Grayson, good stuff as always, man. Really appreciate it. Of course, you got a lot of recruiting notes and team notes up on the Sikkim 365 message boards. If you're not a premium member just yet, definitely check that out. I think you'll like all the extras that come with that. And we do appreciate you for listening, as always. Anything else, man?
I just wanted to say Colt and I are actually going to unveil a purely recruiting podcast next week. I'm not sure if it'll be premium or for whoever, but I think we might be working on a little something there. So
okay.
Be on the lookout for that. And yeah, join Sikkim 365. We got a lot of stuff coming out, a lot of recruiting right now as the season, you know, signing day is coming up.
Right.
You know, and so we're definitely going to be posting a ton of notes on that. And of course, you know, insider information from you, me, Colt, on football, and then basketball gets started as well. So definitely a lot to check out on Sikkim365.com.
Very good. Exciting stuff. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We will talk to you next week. This has been the Fast Friday Podcast on Sikkim365.com and iTunes.